Hey everyone, how's it going?
Good.
You guys ready to learn some science, I guess? We're not gonna do some science, but we're gonna learn some science. Feel good? Okay, we're gonna learn about motivation today, okay? So first thing, you gotta pull out some stuff to take notes with, okay? Grab something to take notes with. Get your pen and paper out, okay? And I want you to write down something, okay? Come on in, guys, come on in. Get more of you in here. Okay, we'll tell them to hurry. No problem. Okay. All right. So first thing I want you to write down, okay? Motivation doesn't happen to you. It's a choice. Okay? Motivation doesn't happen to you. It's a choice. Okay? So we're going to learn about how to make the choice today. Okay? We're going to learn about some psychology, some neurochemistry. We're going to learn a lot of different things today about kind of really how motivation works. Okay? You guys ready for it?
All right, let's get started. Let me see if I can grab this little clicker here.
All right, first of all, there are three types of motivation. Okay? Three types of motivation. The first one, you can see it on the board here, is biological. So when you're hungry, what do you want to do?
Eat.
Right? That's a motivation, right? You feel that feeling of hunger and your body's saying, have you ever been so hungry you almost can't think about anything else?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm so hungry. Right, that's a motivator, right? So biological. When you're thirsty, you wanna
eat.
There's all sorts of biological motivations, right? That's normal, it's part of life. It's who we are. Alright. So the second one is called external motivation. Okay? This is rewards and punishments. Right? Anyone have parents? You've probably experienced this one before, right? Okay? Rewards and punishments. This is why it's external, is it's coming from the outside and trying to get you to be motivated to do X. If you do Y, I'll give you this reward. Or if you do X, I'll give you this punishment. Does that make sense? Okay? Rewards and punishments. And up until the 1940s, the science basically was, these are the two types of motivation, okay? And then a guy came along named Harry Harlow. Harry here, he's holding a rhesus monkey, and he was at the University of Wisconsin, and they were trying to measure and understand how smart are rhesus monkeys, okay? So they devised a little experiment. They created these little puzzles, okay, for the monkeys to solve. So to be able to lift the latch, you gotta be able to first remove the pin and then slide out the hook, right? And then you can unlatch, right? You can lift the latch, okay? And what they did is they thought, okay, we're gonna reward the monkeys when they figure out the puzzle. And the idea was they would give them a little raisin each time they figured out a puzzle. And the monkeys, they love the little raisins. They're like sweet little treats, right? All right, but what happened was fascinating. As they went down these 30 different cages, and they started putting the same basic little puzzle in each of their cages. By the time they got to the end of the line, the first monkeys already figured them out. They didn't even have to offer them the raisin. They just figured it out. And Harry thought, there must be another type of motivation. Because these puzzles, they're not found in a natural environment. They don't have instincts to figure out puzzles like this. They were just curious. And so he thought there must be a third type of motivation. And he called it intrinsic motivation, curiosity, enjoyment. Is it fun to just kind of figure something out?
Yeah.
And you kind of enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
That is intrinsic motivation. Okay, so there's this third type. And over time, we've learned that this third type of motivation is actually the most effective and most important type of motivation. Yeah, we have those biological motivations. Yes, there's rewards and punishments, whether natural or artificial in the world. But the one that really matters most, and the one that we're going to focus on today, the one that I want to help you develop, is this one, intrinsic motivation. Okay, by the 1970s, these two guys came along, Edward Deci and Richard Ryan. They came along and they wrote a book called Intrinsic Motivation and Self-Determination in Human Behavior. So we're all going to read this together today. I'm just kidding. It's a really dense book, so I'm going to sum it up for you, okay? What they basically discovered is not only is intrinsic motivation real and the most useful to us as humans, but that going backward, external motivation over time actually decreases our motivation. So they did a study with sales teams from 100 of the top 500 corporations in America at the time, right? And all these corporations, they had created sales incentives, meaning, hey, if you sell X amount more than you normally sell, we'll give you a TV, or we'll give you, they give them prizes. Does that make sense? And what they discovered is in the first 3 months of the new motivation, of the external reward, motivation went up. But by 6 months, it was back to where it was when they started. And by 9 months, what happened? It actually decreased, and they had lower motivation at that point. So relying on external motivators, actually, over the long haul, right up front, ooh, that sounds nice, I want to win this or get that, right? But over the long haul, external motivators decreases our motivation. Okay? Let's run a little thought experiment. If I offer you a reward to do something, but it's there every week and you can still get the same reward, is it as exciting a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later? It's not as exciting anymore, right? And what happens if I remove the reward? Now are you motivated? You're even less motivated at that point, right? So you have to, in order to make external motivators work, you have to always keep using this same thing and keep increasing it over time. And if you keep increasing it forever, it's not going to really work, right? So what you want to rely on in your own motivation is your intrinsic motivation. And we're going to get into how to increase that, okay? All right. So, again, if you want to write this down in your notebooks, okay, external motivation decreases motivation over time. Intrinsic motivation, the more you act on that motivation, the more your motivation will increase. Okay? That's the basic concept of what we're really talking about today. External motivation decreases motivation over the long haul. Intrinsic motivation increases when you act on it over the long haul. Okay? All right, let's keep going. Okay, now let's get into the neuroscience. So we're going to shift gears. So now you know the basics of motivation and how it works and what we're seeking. Now we're going to go look inside our heads and our bodies, and we're going to look at the chemicals that are associated with motivation, okay? So the first chemical is called dopamine, okay? So I want everyone right now, close your eyes for me, okay? Close your eyes, and I want you not to do it, but to think about standing up. Okay, think about standing up. The moment you started thinking about standing up, your body started creating dopamine, and it creates it specifically along a pathway in your brain. That pathway is the pathway in your brain that says stand up. So now everyone, stand up. Okay, now you acted on it. Okay, and so you got a little bit of dopamine there when you acted on it. Now you're standing. Now go ahead and sit down. So here's what's interesting. If you've done, who's stood up before today? Everyone, all right, good. Because if you haven't, that might be interesting. Okay, so here's what happens in our bodies with dopamine. The moment we anticipate doing something we've done frequently before, like standing up, right, is we actually get a big burst of dopamine at the moment we think about doing that thing. If you've done it many, many times before. Does that make sense? You get a big hit of dopamine right as you even think about doing that thing, and it makes you want to do it, right? And then you get up and you do it, okay? Now, vice versa, if you've never done the thing before, who's done something for the first time recently they've never done before? Right here. Right here.
Coming to this thing.
Okay, did you feel any a little bit like, what is this going to be like? A little bit of trepidation? Yeah. Give me some other ones. What's something you've done for the first time before recently?
Making
Making nunchucks. Yeah, cool. So you probably were excited by the idea of having nunchucks, but think about actually doing it. Might have been a little bit of trepidation in that, right? Like, how do I do this? Am I going to be able to do it well? Is this going to work out? What else?
I'm studying trim board.
Studying what?
We're setting trim board.
Oh, setting trim board. You need to trim in your house? Are you set stuffing? Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're like, how do I even do this, right? You feel a little bit of trepidation. Here's what's happening when you first start something new, okay? Is you get very little dopamine. And the more rare that thing is in your life, the more you've had little to no experience, right? The lesser amount of dopamine you get up front. But when you actually complete that thing, when you actually set the trim board, and it's all done, and you see it, and it's all really looking nice, and the house looks better, and you're like, this is awesome, right? You get this big hit of dopamine at that point, okay? So, if you've done it before, when you anticipate doing it, you get lots of dopamine, okay? And then very little when you complete the task. But if vice versa, when you've never done that thing before, you get very little dopamine, but then you get a big burst of dopamine when you actually complete it. So when you've done something you've never done before and you complete it, got it done, how does it feel?
Good.
Awesome. Feels awesome, right? You feel like, yeah, I got that thing done, right? That's the dopamine working in your body. That's your body saying, hey, this is a good job, you did this. It's because your brain is almost like paths. Who's ever gone hiking before and you follow a path, right? Who's ever gone off the path? Okay, both, right? Now the path, it's all trodden down. Many people have walked that path before you, right? But when you go off the path, there's no path there. You're just kind of figuring it out. You're bushwhacking, you're trying to get through and so forth, right? Does that make sense? It's the same with our brains. The things we've done many times, we have neural pathways all over our brains to do that thing. So we get very little dopamine at the end of it, but we get a lot that says, ooh, I know this path. I can see the path forward. So your body's like, yeah, we know how to do this. But when it's brand new to you, your body's kind of like, I don't know, how do I do this? But then when you actually do it, your body's like, oh, we can do it now. And it creates a new pathway. And the more you do it, the more those things reverse, okay? All right, so that's dopamine. Dopamine feels good, too, and it's the basis of all action. It's also the basis of all habits, right? The moment you anticipate doing something and then you want to do it, who's got a habit? Anyone? Right? The moment you anticipate doing that habit, you get a big burst of dopamine, and it makes you want to do it. Does that make sense? Because you've done it many times before. Okay? And even addiction. All addiction at its chemical level in your brain is actually just dopamine. That's all it is. Okay? All right. So, next one. Next chemical is called serotonin. Okay? Serotonin is the confidence chemical. Okay? This is the one that makes you feel really confident, really strong, like you're capable. The biggest, baddest lion in the jungle, guess what? Has a lot of serotonin, okay? The biggest, baddest lobster at the bottom of the ocean, lots of serotonin pumping through those veins. Isn't that funny? All animals are alike in this way, that we all get the serotonin. But here's what's crazy about serotonin. Serotonin is a social chemical in our bodies, meaning it requires, for us to get it, it requires interactions with other people. We can't get it on our own. We actually have to interact with other people. Isn't that funny? It's the only way that we can get it. So serotonin, it creates esteem. It creates this feeling of confidence, like we're strong, we're capable, we got this, okay? Now, I really like the bow in your hair, by the way, okay? So guess what just happened right there? Does that feel a little bit good to get that compliment? So she just got a little bit of serotonin pumping through her body. Okay, but guess what? I got serotonin too. So serotonin goes both ways. If you go compliment other people, right? If you go praise other people, if you create esteem with other people, you get serotonin too. So when you go around giving people confidence, or sorry, compliments, what do you feel? What do you feel? You feel nice? You feel good, right? That's what comes from complimenting. So you don't have to wait to be complimented. You don't have to like put out the vibe, I'm so cool, someone compliment me. You can just go compliment other people and you'll get serotonin and you'll actually build your own confidence. Isn't that cool? So serotonin is a social chemical. Here's another social chemical, oxytocin. Oxytocin is the love chemical. So it's not from compliments. This one comes from touch, from care, from being loved. Does that make sense? And again, just like serotonin, from you loving. So you don't have to wait to receive it. You can actually give it to other people and you'll get oxytocin. You'll feel those feelings of love. So when you're caring and loving and go give someone a hug, you'll experience it, okay? So here's what's interesting though, and I'm gonna touch on a subject that is a little bit, I'm gonna keep it appropriate, okay? But for those of you who are teens, especially older teens, and you might be thinking about kissing someone sometime soon, okay? Here's what happens in your body. If you have a 6-second kiss, you get a lot of oxytocin from that. You do a 30-second hug, and you get a lot of oxytocin from that. And what it ends up creating is trust. You start to feel this feeling of trust. You know how we shake hands when we make an agreement? There's something about that touch that says, I can trust you. We're on the same page. Does that make sense? And what if someone, you're gonna make an agreement and they're like, no, but I won't shake your hand. How would that feel? You'd be kind of like, what's going on with this guy, right? Like, why won't he shake my hand? What's going on? And you would actually, it would decrease your trust probably, right? So back to the kissing, okay? You could kiss someone that's not worthy of trust. Does that make sense? But your body will feel like you should trust them. Do you see what happens there? So just because you're kissing someone, your body will feel like, hey, I can trust this person. But in reality, they may or may not be worthy of your trust. Do you get it? So be careful with that is all I'm trying to say, okay? Just because you're kissing them doesn't mean you should trust them or they deserve a level of trust, okay? And that's one of the reasons why we can kind of get in trouble when we're young, maybe trusting someone we shouldn't have trusted because maybe we were physically intimate with them and our body said, I trust this person. But your mind might go, wait a second, they're kind of not showing up in a good way. Does that make sense? So just be careful with that. That's all I'm saying. Enough said. Okay? Sound good? No more lectures about kissing. All right, here we go. The next one is cortisol. This one is the stress chemical. Okay? This is the stress chemical.
I don't like this one as much.
You don't like this one as much. Okay, this one is interesting because of all the chemicals, it's all the chemicals that we've talked about, it's the most powerful. And that's why sometimes we don't like this one, because it can be overwhelming, okay? So for the cortisol to work, it creates this big boost of energy and it creates a fight or a flight feeling in us, okay? It's like, I'm gonna take you on, or it's like, ah, right? And that takes a ton of energy. I won't make you raise your hand, but if you've ever been in a fight before, it takes a lot of energy, right? And to run away, especially to run for your life, it takes a lot of energy. So cortisol can save your life, okay? Cortisol is powerful, but for it to garner that much energy, it's almost like a video game, right? You have this power move, but maybe it decreases your life. That's what stress does, okay? It's this power move, and it grabs chemicals. Ooh, here we go. We'll come back to that one. It grabs, not chemicals, but it grabs energy from all these other sources in our body in order to give us that fight or flight energy, okay? You could be totally tired, right? I once did a 7-day hike where we backpacked for 7 straight days, and right at the end, I got chased by a bear. I was exhausted. But the moment I saw that bear coming, I was like, yeah, right? All of a sudden I had all this energy, right? That is because of stress. That's because of cortisol. It gives you a ton of energy.
So extra energy will come from desperation?
From desperation, or more importantly, that feeling of like, something crazy is about to happen, okay? And often, life or death situations, even beyond that. Who's felt stress over a test? Yeah. Who's felt stress over a relationship? Right? Who's felt stress over, you know, mom walking in the room? All she did was walk in the room, but you felt a little stress, right? So it's not just when the bear shows up, right? It's not just in a desperate moment. It can come anytime we feel that feeling of stress. It's psychological as well, okay? Here's what happens. Because it draws on it literally stress, and it's a sliding scale, so it's not 100% each time. It's like percentages depending on how much stress you're experiencing. But it'll shut down cell regeneration. Your body is constantly creating new cells all the time, right? Your skin cells are replaced every 7 days. Your body's literally creating a new suit for yourself every 7 days, right? It needs to constantly be creating new cells. And when you experience stress, it slows down that cell regeneration. So if you've ever seen someone get really stressed out for a really long period of time, you know what happens? They begin to age quickly. They really do. They age fast. And I've seen this before. My parents went through a period of some real stress, and it was like they aged 5 years in 3 months. Does that make sense? So you want to not experience long-term amount of stress.
That's the reason stress causes gray hairs?
Exactly. Stress will cause gray hairs. Who's read Les Miserables? Les Miserables. Good, good. Anyone else? Okay, fantastic book, highly recommend. Jean Valjean, at one point, he gets so stressed out with this choice that he has to have to either turn himself in or take care of this little girl who needs him and has no one else, and she's been abused and basically made as a slave. And he's like, I can either do the right thing and turn myself in, or I can do the right thing and take care of this little girl. Which thing do I do? And he gets so stressed out, his hair goes completely white. Right? That's stress. That's what that does.
Is there any way to recover from something like that?
Yes, through rejuvenation. And if you want to come to my later talk about the energy to homeschool, because it's really just about creating energy, I'll give you all the tips on how to reverse that as well. Okay? All right, let's keep going. So it shuts down cell regeneration, our immune system. So if someone gets really stressed for a long period of time, they tend to get more sick. Okay? Or your growth hormones, and even serotonin. Remember serotonin? What chemical is that? That's the esteem or the confidence chemical, right? So it shuts down your confidence over time, okay? However, who here would like a nice burst of energy sometimes?
It also makes really
Yeah, it does. Stress for short bursts is a good thing. You want that energy, right? Who's ever been preparing for a test? And all of a sudden, right before the test, you get extremely focused. And you're just like, I've got this. And you just focus, and all your energy goes into the test. And you get it done, right? That is a good thing. Life will be stressful, guys. No matter what, life will be stressful. So getting used to it, and getting used to especially using that energy to your advantage, is a good thing. What you want to avoid is not stress. You want to avoid long periods of stress, like days, months, years, right? Short bursts, 3-4 hours, great. It's great, gives you all this energy. Who has something big you're about to do? Anyone? What are you gonna do?
State and regional math counts competition.
Yeah, and I bet you're gonna experience some stress. That will actually give you energy. It's a good thing. Now, you don't wanna be in a math competition for 3 months. Yeah, she almost just puked out her lunch, you know what I mean? 3 months of math. But how long is the competition? Probably a couple hours?
All day.
See, that's a big one, right? You need some extra energy for that, and stress will actually provide that to you. So stress is a good thing in short bursts. Here's the idea, okay?
So level of pressure or stress, right? This way, and performance. You'll get to your best performance when you have, see this ideal zone? That's where you get to your optimal performance, okay? What you don't want to do is just go, you don't want 3 months of math competition. One day is plenty, right? So that's where you start to go into burnout if you spend too long. But you want some extra energy at times. You need some extra energy at times. Even if you've been backpacking for 7 days and you get chased by a bear, you better hope you have some extra energy, right? And stress will give that to you, and it actually can be a really good thing. But you need to learn now, especially when you're young, how to harness that energy, okay? Harness it for short bursts. One day maximum. And I bet you'll be exhausted at the end of that day, right? You'll crash out and you'll sleep hard, and that's a good thing. That's probably max, right? One day of big stress, that's all you want, okay? 2-3 hours, that's great. Okay, and then I skipped one here. All right, the last one, this one, it's less of a motivator, but it's a helper, okay? So this one is endorphins, okay? This comes from anytime you do something really hard, your body will begin to produce some endorphins. So I want you to pay attention when you're in that math competition, okay? There'll probably be some moments throughout the day, if you pay attention to it, where you're going to feel, I'm going to use a word that might sound not good, but in this case, it's plenty okay. You might feel a little hot. You might feel like a little light, a little airy. What endorphins do is they're the body's natural painkiller, okay? So you'll get this when you do something difficult, whether mental or emotional or physical. When you do something difficult for at least a half hour, generally an hour to 2 hours, your body will go, we're gonna help you out now. Here's some natural painkiller. And you're gonna feel a little lighter and feel a little happier. Who's ever done like a really long run? And about a certain point through it, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this isn't as hard as it was. Who's had that experience? It's called a runner's high, okay? That is endorphins kicking in. That's your body going, okay, let's help you out now. You're in pain. We're going to help you out and take care of you. And it gives you just a little bit of a high, okay? So endorphins are kind of cool because endorphins help you push through the hard things. It's like your body coming to the rescue. Okay. So those are the chemicals that create motivation in us. But remember the first thing I had you write down? What was it?
Motivation doesn't happen to you.
Motivation doesn't happen to you. It's a choice. Okay? Motivation doesn't happen to you. It's a choice. So now that you know the fundamentals, let's go back. Okay? You know about endorphins. You know about stress. Stress can be used to your advantage, right? It's really useful in short bursts. Okay? You know about oxytocin and the love chemical. You know about esteem, serotonin, right? And confidence. You know about dopamine. And going back here, you know that if you're acting on intrinsic desires, things that you're curious about, things that you want, you're going to experience more and more motivation over time, and external motivators will decrease it over time, right? So focus on the things that you really want to do, and you'll actually increase, right? And you might need to figure out what you want to do about it. Who likes cleaning their room? Okay, a few of you do, okay? Why do you like it? Nice clean room, what? So you're not stressed? Yeah, the clutter can kind of stress you out. Anyone else? Yeah.
Yeah, I think honestly when I have a cleaner room, I get more used to that
matter. Yeah, you feel clearer, you feel better. You felt the results. So the actual act of cleaning, is it that fun?
No.
Not really. Sometimes for some of us, right? But the result at least is really good. And because we like the result, we can even start to dance with the mop, I guess, right? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
You're just like, yeah, that's smart. Yeah. Alright, that's cool. I like it. In other words, if you discovered the thing about it, even if it's just the result, you can sort of convince yourself, actually, I want to do this thing, right? With my company, I run a very large company. We've got about 180 employees, right? And I have to do, every month, expense reports. So everything that I spend, I have to submit receipts for,
is so boring. It's so boring. But you know what? What I want is a well-run, well-managed company that gets tax write-offs and takes care of its finances and we don't overspend. So for that reason, even though I hate doing expense reports, I like the result of it, so I'm motivated to do it. You can find your motivation if you find the reason why. In other words, I don't do expense reports because the IRS might come get me if I don't. I do it because I want a well-run company. Does that make sense? So find the thing about the thing that you want, and you'll actually experience more motivation for it. Okay, so you've got all the fundamentals now. Now we're going to go back to the thing I said at the very beginning. Motivation doesn't happen to you, it's a choice. And I'm going to show you how to make the choice. So let's ask this question first, though. Who would like more motivation? Be real. More motivation to get things done, to go live the life you want. Who wants it? Raise your hand high. Okay. All right. Some of you aren't raising your hand. I'm interested. Pink over here. No motivation for you, huh? You're okay. All right. So there's three things that you need to do. This is three steps, okay? Purpose first, then the right level of autonomy, and then mastery, okay? Over time, okay? So purpose, what does that mean? It means you have a desire, you have a want, and you're gonna go get it. Something big, right? In my household, we call that a BHAG. Big, hairy, audacious goal. My son, he's got short-term BHAGs and long-term BHAGs. One of his short-term BHAGs right now is to go to nationals in Taekwondo. One of his long-term BHAGs right now is to become a physician, okay? I ask him almost daily, hey, what's your long-term BHAG? Become a physician. What's your short-term BHAG? Go to nationals in Taekwondo, right? We're always focused on purpose, okay? What is purpose? What is his purpose? What is he driving towards? In fact, I won't share them all with you, but we have four categories of BHAGs, and then we do a short-term and a long-term. We do one category is physical, one category is mental, one category is emotional, one category is spiritual. And I have them develop BHAGs for each one, short-term, long-term. What are the big things that you're going after, okay? So that's purpose, figuring out what you want. And what you want, I'm just going to break the news to you, isn't exactly what everyone else wants for you, is it? So figure out the difference. Because subconsciously, if it's just told to you, you should want this, this is what you should do, you won't actually get any motivation from that. But if you, on the other hand, really figure out what you want, what you desire, does that make sense? You will find purpose in it. Okay? All right, what time? Oh, we got a little bit of time. All right, so let me share a story with you, okay? You guys want to hear a personal story about my experience with exactly this process, okay? When I was 12 years old, any 12-year-olds in the group? We got a few of you, okay? When I was 12 years old, my parents put me into this new school. Ugh. Who went off? Was that you? Is that you? Yeah. Who's had that experience? This new school, this new program, this new co-op. Okay. So they put me into this new school, and this particular school is a private school. It was run by, I want to say, conservative hippies. Yeah, they were kind of an odd bunch. They were cool, interesting people in some ways. Conservative hippies, crunchy conservatives is what they call them sometimes, okay? They really believed in this concept. Tell me if you've heard this concept before. Inspire, not require. Who's heard of that? Few of you? Okay, yeah. Inspire or not require is this one, okay? But the problem was at this school, they didn't really focus you up on this one. They just really talked about this one a lot. But most of the students really didn't know their purpose yet. And I was one of those students. So on the first day, they just said, hey, we believe in inspire, not require. Therefore, we only want you to learn if you want to learn. Okay? And my 12-year-old brain went, wait, what? I only have to learn if I want to learn? And they went, and I even raised my head. Are you sure? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, so if I don't want to learn, can I just like leave class? And they were like, yeah, stay on the campus. But like, if you are not feeling it, yeah, cool.
Be gone.
And I literally did that. I was, be gone. They had these bathrooms, these really big, weird bathrooms, because this building wasn't originally designed to be a school. They took it over. By force, I'm just kidding. They took it over, and they had these really big bathrooms, and there was like an area with like the stalls and the urinals. Yeah, my guy. And then this other area was sinks, and then couches. They had couches in the bathroom. And my adult self just goes, ugh, couches in a bathroom? Ugh. But my 12-year-old self was like, what a nice place to take a nap. I would go in there. And I would go in there, and I would literally, I'm not joking, nap every day. I nap every day, okay? Also, just across the street, I actually broke a rule on this one, but just across the street, there was this other company, and they had a basketball hoop, you know, and kind of, it was kind of this nice little court, and their workers would go outside a couple times a day and play basketball, and every time I saw them playing basketball, I was like, and I ran over there, and I'd play basketball with these random people, and they're like, who's this kid? All right, let's play, you know, and we would play basketball. Needless to say, I didn't learn anything for an entire year. For an entire school year, I didn't learn anything. Okay? Make sense? Whew. Okay, that summer, so now I'm 13 at this point, hanging out with my best friend Ryan. He and I loved to compete with each other, and we were kind of nerds. I always also kind of prided myself on, like, he's a couple years older than me, but I always felt like I was like right there with him educationally, right? Kind of on a similar level with him. Does that make sense? And so this summer, after a year of not doing anything, I'm hanging out with him and he's like, oh, Adam, I learned how they create QB rating, which is quarterback rating, right? And that's where you take 9 different stats of a quarterback, yards per attempt, yards per game, you know, all these different things, right? All these different numbers. And you use some basic pre-algebra, and you create one number out of those 9, right? And the higher the number, the better the quarterback. Does that make sense? QB rating, okay? So he was showing me the equation of exactly how they create QB rating, and guess what? I couldn't follow him. He's like showing it to me, and he's like, oh, and then you do it, and I was like, huh? I had no clue what he was talking about. I couldn't follow him. And as he's talking, have you ever had that experience? Someone else is talking and it starts to go like you can't even hear them anymore, and you're just in your own head, right? That's happening, and slowly but surely I'm realizing, oh, I'm dumb. And I really thought that. I was like, oh no, I'm dumb. Holy cow. And I was like, and then I kind of shook out of it, and I was like, I gotta go, my mom needs me, and I left. And I was walking home, and I was literally just walking home, and I went, oh my gosh, I just wasted a whole year sleeping in a bathroom. What in the world was I doing, right? That's really how I felt. And I get home, and I do what all of us do. I mean, come on, guys, we all do this, right? I got home, and I was like, Mom! I blamed her. Mom, why'd you send me to that school, right? Who's blaming their mom for stuff that's really on you? Anyone? Come on, admit it. They're not here. You're not going to get in trouble. Come on. You know, your dad? Okay, yeah. Who's blaming your dad for stuff that was really on you? Oh, yeah. Oh, dads are always, right? They're a little slower, so you're just like, oh, I'll get this sucker. Yeah. I blamed my mom, right? I blamed my parents, okay? I blamed them. I was like, Mom, why'd you send me to this school? Okay? And the way I remember it is she was like, well, Adam, don't worry too much. Let's just go down and talk to the school counselor. That's how I remember it. But I've talked to her about this since. And the way she remembers it is like, yeah, you did, you sucker. Now you're finally realizing, you know, the error of your ways, right? But again, how I experienced it was, let's just go down to the school and talk to the counselor. So like 3 days later, we get an appointment. We go down and we talk to the school counselor. And this guy, his name's Larry Hill, this big Marine, right? This big Marine guy. Like, he taught there as well. He taught English. And he would literally be talking about a book, and he would literally lift weights while he was doing it. I think just to intimidate us. I don't know. You know, like, this big Marine, this huge guy, right? So I go in his office and I sit down and we tell him, and I'm kind of like, yeah, I spent the whole year doing nothing. And he's like, I know, yeah, we've seen you. You know, they knew. And I was like, you guys knew? I thought I was getting away with it. And they're like, I was like, why do you need to force us? And they're like, inspire, not require. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know. And we had this whole conversation. And again, I had that experience where he starts to sound like, mur, 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 and I'm just like off in my own head. And he's like, Adam, Adam. And I'm like, what? He's like, you seem really worried. What's going on, really? And I go, I don't know, I guess I just wasted a whole year at, like, at best, am I going to graduate late? Like, am I dumb now? Like, what? You know, I'm telling him all these feelings I'm having. And he goes, Adam, you could graduate a year early if you want to. And I was a punk kid, okay? I don't recommend doing this. And I went, well, maybe I'll graduate 2 years early. And he goes, huh. And he stands up and he goes to this whiteboard in his office, okay? He goes to this whiteboard in the office, and I mean, at this point, I'm 13, so if I'm going to graduate 2 years early, I've graduated 16, not 18, so I have 3 years, right? He starts to create a three-year plan for me to graduate from this school in 3 years. Column one for 1 year, column two, second year, column three, third year, right? He's erasing stuff, he's moving stuff, oh yeah, you got to do this too, you got to have these credits. He's figuring it all out on the board, right? And he doesn't look at me for 10 minutes. I mean, he literally doesn't pay attention. He's just figuring this out. How would I create a three-year plan for this 13-year-old to graduate and cover everything that he needs to cover? Does that make sense? He creates this three-year plan for me, 10 minutes in, and he finally turns around and he looks at me. He looks right at me and he goes, what do you think? And to this day, I have no clue why I said this. I went, okay. And I went to work. I worked the rest of that summer. I worked each of those schools. I worked every summer all the way through, and I graduated 2 years early. Now, I'll admit that I didn't really learn how to think. I learned how to jump through the hoops, right? But what I did learn is how to work hard academically, right, over those 3 years. And it was hard. It was brutal. I basically doubled all my classes every school year and did work in the summers to get it done. I learned to work hard academically. And what did I gain when he said, what do you think? And I said, okay.
Motivation.
I gained specifically purpose. That's the first step to gaining motivation. You see, the school, and I don't want to blame them, it was fine. They focused on this one, autonomy, right? Freedom, flexibility, you figured out, right? But this is what I was missing, was purpose. And once I got that, all that autonomy helped. Because instead of saying, well, Adam, you're gonna have to graduate a year late because you have to do 1 year at a time and you have to do this grade and that grade and so forth, they gave me the autonomy to figure it out and go. But the autonomy didn't work until I had purpose. Okay? And then lastly, mastery. As I progress, as I passed the tests and completed assignments and got things done and kept on going, I started to go, oh, I'm not dumb anymore. Oh, I've got this figured out. Oh, I aced that. Oh, I killed that. Yeah, I'm doing it. Who here is really good at something? Name it.
Theater.
Drawing.
Being an artist.
Tumbling. Give me more. Come on. Don't be shy about it.
Reading.
Math.
Sports.
Taking care of little kids. When you started, were you good at those things?
No.
No. But did you ever want to do it?
Yes.
Yeah. And eventually, as you start to do that thing, you gain mastery. And what's funny is if you're good at that thing, like, do you like doing math? Right here. You like doing math?
I love it.
You love it because you're good at it, right? There's nothing like being good at something that makes you want to do it more. Does that make sense? So that's motivation. You need purpose first. What is your BHAG? What is the thing you want to accomplish, right? My BHAG at that point was graduate in 3 years, graduate at 16, graduate 2 years early.
than the autonomy and freedom to be able to do it with help, but to be able to do it, right? And as I progressed, I got more confident and more confident and more confident that I could do it. Does that make sense? That's motivation. That's the choice. But if you skip purpose, all the autonomy in the world doesn't matter. And you'll never really achieve mastery because you don't know what you want to do in the first place. So, everyone, write big, hairy, audacious goal on your paper right now. Big, hairy, audacious goal. Why does it need to be hairy? Because it needs to be a little scary. All right, have you ever seen like hair in the drain? It needs to be scary, okay? So that's why it's a hairy goal, okay? Okay? Big, hairy, audacious goal. It needs to push you. It needs to be, when he said, hey, what do you think? And I said, okay, I was scared out of my mind. I was like, what am I going to, I'm going to have to work so hard to meet this goal. But I met it, right? It needs to be scary. Write down big, hairy, audacious goal. And then right now, I want you to not only write that down, but start thinking about yours. If you can write it down, do it. Don't rush it, but if you've got it in your head, if something pops in right now and you go, that's what I want to do, that's my goal, write it down. And if you don't have it, don't stop until you get it. Don't stop until you get it. Write down the goal. Okay? Write down the goal. Gain that purpose, and once you gain that purpose, do everything it takes to go get it. And once you've trained yourself to do this over and over and over throughout life, you can do bigger, cooler, better things. Right? 15 years ago, I didn't think I could, I didn't even imagine I could run a tens of millions of dollar company. That's what I do now. Right? Get after it. What is your big, hairy, audacious goal? That's your purpose. Okay, guys? Got it written down? Big, hairy, audacious goal? Go figure it out. Class is over.